Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, the creator of the Brown Briefly, which still carries his name in its honor. Although Brian left this mortal vale of tears over 2 years ago, we try to preserve Brian's roundtable format by adhering to his concept that less is more, more or less. Today, Truman O'Brien is guiding us from the Voice of Vachon Jean Bosch broadcast studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon. And joining Truman is Craig Bellis, Truman's wingman, not only on the radio, but also in the air.
Yeah.
And sort of partner in his crash in the trees, right?
Yes, that's indeed.
And then also joining us and zooming in from his yacht, although I can't tell what that is in the background, Kevin. For those of you on the radio, Kevin has this structure behind him that please explain.
To get to the Wi-Fi, I'm on the upper flybridge, and the wind is a little brisk here, so I'm sheltering behind a large umbrella to hopefully my audio is coming through without too many distortions.
It's coming through great. So, and we're all jealous of you being out on the water.
That's for sure.
And then
it's
also
a good place to be.
Yeah. Also joining us today and zooming in from their respective homes are Rondi Lightmark and Susan McCabe from the whole Vachon Project. Welcome.
Thank you.
So let's take a moment and just sort of reflect on the Vachon world that we all live in. And so, Kevin, maybe you can start. What's been going on in your life this week, and beside being out on the water?
Well, that's pretty much it. We're en route back to our beautiful island of Vachon, but we've been visiting the islands of the San Juans, and we've mainly been anchoring out, and still with COVID around. Trying to, you know, not jump into the dock scene so much. So yeah, we've had some spectacular times at quiet anchorages and a few blustery, windy ones. And just 2 days on Cyprus, which is a DNR preserve, which is largely publicly lands and miles of trails. So a fantastic place to stop if you haven't.
Quick question. Did you hit Susha Island? That's one of my favorites.
We opted for Matia instead.
Oh, okay. Which is right next door.
Mm-hmm. Right next door to Susha, yeah.
Okay.
Fantastic. We're all jealous of you, Kevin.
Indeed.
You know that. So, Susan, what's been happening in your world?
Well, nothing as exciting as islands in the San Juans, but I have successfully grown beets this year, after 3 years of total failure, and I'm going to have some for lunch today.
Yum.
That's my excitement.
Beets are one of my wife's, Pam's favorite foods. To me, the sort of the hemorrhoids of the earth. It all depends on how you like them.
First, they're a really great liver cleanse if you have need for that.
Oh. My liver's just fine.
They're not particularly good.
I address that to Craig and True.
Well, yeah. they're not particularly good for gout, if I remember right.
You're right. Yeah. Right.
I do love them, though.
So, Craig, what's been going on in your world?
Oh, a number of things. My wife's been in and out of our home, living over at a friend's house who just, their golden gave birth to 7 baby golden puppies, which are cute beyond belief. And I can't hardly dig my wife out of there. She's helping to take care of them and get them all set up here initially. The other, of course, is that Truman and I, and I'll let Truman talk about it some more, is we've been working on putting a new propeller on our aeroplane, and painted. I did a little painting on that. And when I put the picture of the painting that I did on the social media, I was very proud of the job I did. Our former county executive Greg Nichols jumped on and he said, "Props to you," which I thought was a great response to the circumstances. That's about it.
Sounds like fun. And it's hard to beat golden retriever pups. I tell you, they are sweet. So, Rondi, how about you?
Well, I was fortunate this past weekend to be on the water. Also, over on the other side of the Hood Canal with my daughter, Kira, who lives on the island and has bought herself a fishing trawler. Wow. And it's it is in Brennan. I'd never been to that side of the canal above Hood's Port. That's like, I think it was called. It was so beautiful. The canal has an enormous plankton bloom on it right now, which turns the water this electric turquoise. So you think you're in the Bahamas or something. Fortunately, it's not killing anything, but it's quite extraordinary. So it was wonderful all the way around. It was just a beautiful weather, beautiful time, fun to see this new project she's into.
Fantastic. No place like the Pacific Northwest in the summertime, that's for sure. Yeah. So Truman, how about you?
Well, my biggest excitement was I was able to get down my stairs and take a shower at my own house. I mean, that's a huge one, you know. For the folks,
small things in life. Yeah, count,
indeed,
right?
Indeed. For those folks who don't think I'm crazy, I had back surgery about 3 weeks ago, and haven't been able to walk anywhere near normally without assistance. And so I've had to take my showers over at a cousin's house that had a flat entryway and a walk-in shower. So this is a big, big moment in my life to be able to get down my own, my own stairs for a shower. But then, as Craig mentioned, we are modifying our aircraft. We're going from a two-blade prop to a three-blade prop, and there are a number of advantages to that. The first being that you have a lot less ground, or a lot more ground clearance, so that when you're operating off of an unimproved field like we have, you have much less chance of picking up rocks and damaging the propeller. And the three blades give you a better takeoff performance, climb performance, and a little tiny bit in cruise. And the third important, probably the most important, is it really looks sexy. So, you know, come on.
It's also a little quieter, too.
Oh, yeah, it's very quiet, too. But anyway, so we've been having a lot of fun doing that. And our friends, we have two guys who are both mechanics, licensed A&Ps, and they're given.
I think
the
they're
same.
Younger than we are.
They are, but just not much. Not much.
Everyone is younger than.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. The older I get,
doesn't make them young.
Yeah, the older I get, the younger they get. You know, so. But anyway, that's what we've been up to.
Oh, sounds like fun. Yeah, it's sort of like when I made the change from a three-bladed to a four-bladed prop on the boat.
On the boat, yeah.
It made a big difference.
Yeah.
Less vibration, you know, a little bit more push. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if it would be appropriate to mention I had a four-blade prop on the boat, but, you know, you never see it. So, you know, the sexy factor doesn't really apply.
Yeah.
Yeah. Harder to put stripes on it. Right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So I'm Bruce Holman, and I live at KVI Beach. And what has been exciting and also bittersweet is the Canada geese are flying by the beach every morning and every evening. So they're starting to migrate south, which is an indication that summer is close to being over. You know, when the Canada geese come in the spring, it's sort of like, oh, there's hope.
Yeah.
When they come in the fall, it's sort of like, oh, no, it's coming. So it's been very interesting to wake up to the honking of these sort of bees of Canada geese, sort of learning how to head south. Truman.
Yeah, I just have to tell a quick story. I probably told this before on the air, but I was based in Anchorage for 4 years, and so I spent quite a bit of time up there. And in the fall, they have a tremendous population of Canada geese there in the summer. And in the fall, you can see them beginning to practice. And you see the kids out there, the youngsters, and they are all over the sky. I mean, they're They're blowing apart the formation, and the parents are over there going, get over here, come on, get over here, get lined up. You can hear them. I mean, you can just hear them saying that, you know. And they over time, you watch them, they get a little better, a little better. Pretty soon, they've got it down, and off they go. But anyway, it's very entertaining. So,
great.
Just a quick comment about summer being over, or almost over. It's not over down where my children live in Ashland, Oregon.
Yeah.
It's 100. I think it's supposed to be 104 today, and there's two more days this week that are supposed to be over 100 degrees.
Wow.
So, wow. They don't call it Ashland for nothing.
Yeah.
Another good reason.
My kids live in Los Angeles, and they're having similar weather.
Yeah, yeah.
Another good reason to live in Puget Sound in the summertime, that's for sure. Today is a significant day for the American continents. So today in 1492, we all know 1492, Columbus sailed from the Canary Islands to the Americas. It was his last final port of call in Europe before he sailed for the Americas. And of course, if you've read the book 1491, which I highly recommend, it really clarifies a lot of the significant impact of that voyage. And I don't know about you, and I'd like to hear from you guys, but when I was a kid, Columbus Day was a big thing.
Oh, yeah.
Parades and holiday and days off from school. And I mean, it was a very different thing than it is today. Any comments?
Well, aren't they now trying to change it to Indigenous Peoples Day? I think is what the goal is. But if you ever watched the series The Sopranos, they took that up. And of course, the Italians were incensed that they were going to change the name from Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day. And of course, all those gangsters were very upset. And pretty entertaining. Yeah, Craig.
I was living in the San Francisco Bay Area for a good part of my youth. And of course, Columbus Day was a big day in San Francisco. The blessing of the fleet down at Fisherman's Wharf and the whole nine yards. History is not always sanitized, and people are getting back to perhaps what the real facts were of that whole discovery/invasion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Susan?
Yeah, I thought it was October that we celebrated Columbus Day. It used to be October 12th, and then they moved it to a weekend around that date. What am I missing?
Oh, no, it is. This is just the day that Columbus sailed from the Canary Islands.
Okay.
It's October that he actually landed, made the first landfall in the Caribbean. So you're not off base. It's just this is the beginning. This is when he finally leaves Europe and heads out into the quote-unquote great unknown. Although it wasn't as unknown as we learned as kids.
Right.
Kevin.
Yeah, you know, from last week, I mentioned I'm reading Churchill's History of the English-Speaking Peoples, and the second book, which I just finished a few days ago, recounted this time period of the Mayflower sailing and previously the discovery, if you will, the discovery of this unpopulated land that we now know as the Americas. And, Churchill had at that time, in the mid-50s when this book was published, had some perspective of the impact of colonization, and that he didn't go into it in depth, but certainly that is a factor. His rendition was that a lot of folks found religious freedom in America and weren't as constrained by all the religious quarrels going on in Europe. So it was one of the factors that induced people, plus the fact that there was free land for their perspective. So, yeah, I think that the, recent awareness, more recent awareness of colonization and the negative implications, I think respecting the indigenous peoples is probably more appropriate from my perspective.
Sure. Yeah. This is also the day that the pilgrims sailed from Plymouth, England, aboard the Mayflower to settle what would become the Massachusetts Bay Colony. So another sort of layer of today's impact on the Americas and sort of colonization, the settlement of the Americas.
Do you have a date on that? Susan, do you have a date on that, though, Bruce? Was that 16?
I'm sorry?
Do you have a date on that?
You know, I forgot to put it in the notes.
It's so carved on the rock.
Yeah, 16.
It is.
29?
16? What was it?
Yes. Susan, save us.
Well, I don't have an answer.
Take us off that topic.
Yeah. I was getting more political here because it's interesting to me that those folks who came here for religious freedom are the ones who are trying to impose their religion on our country, on our constitution, on our democracy.
There are ironies within history, right?
Yes.
Definitely, yeah.
Okay. So, you were right. Sorry, 1620.
1620. Yeah. All right, great. So today is also National Coffee Ice Cream Day, for those of you who like coffee ice cream, and National Read a Book Day, neither of which provides a great segue into our small talk guests, Rondi Lightmark and Susan McCabe and the whole Vashon project. Although Read a Book Day does give us a chance to reflect on Stuart Brand and Lois Brand's publication in 1968 of the Whole Earth Catalog. Brands fought hard to get NASA to release the Whole Earth photograph. It was a, sort of the first photograph of Earth floating in this sort of a vast blackness of space. And it was that photograph that the Brands used as cover of the Whole Earth Catalog. They were convinced that the image might be a powerful symbol evoking a sense of shared destiny and adaptive strategies from people. And that was sort of the motivation behind the Whole Earth Catalog. And my question for you, Susan and Rondi, is did the Whole Earth Catalog influence the whole Vashon project and the whole Vashon catalog idea?
I'll let Rondi answer that. She was the inspired.
Well, the Whole Earth Catalog, I'm a child of the 60s, and the Whole Earth Catalog was about an awakening. It started in 1968 as a magazine, and then it became a catalog of tools for the counterculture. And very much this was after Rachel Carson's book had come out, and people were looking for a new way to live, going back to the land. And it's quite extraordinary to look at the Whole Earth Catalog today, and you can still find copies, and see themes replayed today that were back there then, you know, solar, for example, or farming, do-it-yourself, community consciousness, freedom from old forms, new diets. It was extraordinary. Mm-hmm. But the way it came about was really that I had gotten inspired to do something to work on the climate crisis. And I joined a group that was brainstorming, and I ended up, we were divided into groups. I ended up talking with Andy James, and kind of between the two of us, I got this light bulb moment that there needed to be something to unite the community, because I know this community well enough that to know that people were individually caring a lot. It was just, there was nothing visible on Main Street, for example, to show that was happening. And the different things that organizations were doing were not known, and things that businesses were doing were not known. So the idea of a catalog all of a sudden, and the Whole Earth, particularly Whole Earth Catalog, was really kind of what created that moment. Let's create a catalog. Let's do something visible that will unite the community.
Mm-hmm. Great. So, Rondi, tell our listeners a bit about yourself. I mean, what in your life and what has led you to the point of that recognition and that sort of brilliant idea that sort of has led to the whole Vashon project?
Well, before Vashon, I lived on the East Coast until I was 48. I was a teacher and administrator in different schools. Some of them were Rudolf Steiner schools. One was a very well-known progressive school called the Putney School in Vermont. And then when I was 48, my husband died, and I thought that part of my life was over, and I shifted to becoming a grief counselor and also a professional writer. And I worked on four different books as a co-author. And that's what I was doing when I came here. But, you know, what is it? The light on Vashon, the community, whatever. I got inspired to take photographs of dogs in cars.
So
I launched the greeting card company of dogs in cars. I took Craig and Lynn's picture and at Strawberry Festival with their beautiful golden retriever. And certainly got to know a lot of people on Vashon through their dogs. And had a ton of fun doing it. And then I just started to feel the pressure of this, the climate crisis, and I was kind of burnt out on the greeting card business. Mm-hmm. So I sold the business to a family member and decided that I would take up the challenge of trying to figure out how to bring awareness of the climate crisis to Main Street. So the goal has always been how, you know, in World War II, there were posters on Main Street championing things that people could do. There were radio shows, there were movies, there were songs, there were plays, there were poems, whatever, and creativity and humor and hope all keep us going. So that was kind of the vision, how to do something that would keep us going. And so the whole Vashon catalog began with that, particularly to highlight. We ended up getting 75 businesses and 50 plus different and organizations, nonprofits besides environmental organizations, to participate. And they all shared all of this stuff that they were doing that nobody knew was going on. So along with art and other kinds of inspirations, we had amazing participation. It was very exciting. So.
Yeah, Truman.
You know, that's really fascinating, Roddy, the whole idea of the promotion of in World War II. Of course, we had a very clear and present danger, as the saying goes, with the war, and I believe that, like you were saying, that we have that same clear and present danger in the climate issue, and I'm just curious. I'm fascinated by your idea of the promotion that has to be done, and I'm wondering how we can make this climate crisis more of a clear and present danger to people. I'm wondering do you have ideas about that, or to make it more real?
Well, is there anything you wanted to say, Susan?
Well, I have to agree that yes, World War II, we had a clear and present danger. And to my mind right now, the climate crisis is making itself well known. But a lot of folks prefer to stick their heads in the sand and ignore it. And what we at the whole Vashon project are trying to do is to pull their heads out of the sand and do it as a community, knowing that, as Rondi says, when we all work together, we're more effective. The best that we can do as a group is to continue to raise awareness and tell people how they can act. As Rondi has discovered, there are 30 some environmental organizations on the island.
Somebody's phone.
No, sorry.
I don't know if it responds to no.
Answer that.
No.
That's right. The joys of live radio.
Right? Yeah. Sorry.
Anyway, we want to encourage people to get involved and take action. Action is the antidote to despair. We still can make a difference in the climate crisis, but we really have to do what might be considered sacrifices in our current culture. And you know, I'm the one on the whole Vashon Project who wants to scare everybody and say, it's urgent, it's a crisis, do something now. And I am continually being modified by the other folks on the whole Vashon Project to say, okay, don't scare the crap out of people. Let them to act. So that's probably more logical. Rondi?
Oh, well, Kevin wants to say something, but Kevin? I would then follow up as well.
Mm-hmm. Kevin?
Well, I wanted to amplify a couple of points. I used to teach an avalanche awareness with the Mountaineers, and the first course before I got up on stage in front of 300 people was said, do you want me to just like give them the data or scare them? And they said, scare the you-know-what out of them. Because the last thing that they wanted was to see the headlines of fatalities of avalanche deaths on Mountaineers outings. So, Susan, I'm totally understanding where you're coming from. I also would say that I really champion the work that is being described here. I think that the human awareness of climate change has grown significantly. And I think the stats are something like 75% of humans now believe that there is actual human change, you know, human-induced climate change, and it's bad. But not that many people believe that it will impact their lives directly. And I believe that that's the number that needs to change. And I totally agree with the heat dome that we're talking about in Southern California and across the West, with the wildfire smoke that fortunately this summer, cross your fingers, we haven't had a chance to inhale. And just the idea that, you know, the string of 90 degree plus temperatures on Vashon are all things that are, and oh, by the way, Pakistan is what, a third underwater? These are all the indications. And I think it's really important that people see that association, and that I would hope the news organizations are doing a better job of correlating the implications of climate change with these surprising and amazing things we're seeing. They're not at all surprising. They're predicted. And we need to recognize that so people can realize how we need to address the problem and move on.
Thank you, Kevin. I couldn't agree more. And I'd like to mention the fact that rivers are drying up all over our country and the world. And the politics of it are clearly what has slowed the human response to the climate crisis, politics and greed. And I'm not sure what the whole Vashon Project can do about that. That's a bigger bite. Rondi, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yes, although there's other hands going up, so.
Well, Rondi, jump in.
Okay. Yes, well, the thing that really sparked me to begin with about the necessity to bring education and inspiration to Vashon was the a ferry ride that I took to Vancouver Island, sitting next to a guy who told me about another guy named Alan Savory, whose TED Talk is now one of the top ones of all time, with over 5 million viewers by now, I think. And his essential message, although he's been accused of it being all about red meat, it's not. It's about desertification. And it's a very compelling story about the huge amount of the planet that is turning to desert. And at the same time, it ended with a tremendous amount of hope, with him quoting people, he said, who had more knowledge about this sort of thing than he did, that if we restore soils all over the planet, they can sequester carbon and make a big difference in terms of helping not only the issue of CO2 emissions, but also, and most especially, the issue of soils drying out, which then lead to drought, which then lead to rivers drying up. And we've all been so fastened on the CO2 piece that the soil piece has not been given nearly enough attention. And so that's what really ignited me. We've got to let people know that, okay, Vashon is not a place where we have to worry about it like they do in California, Texas, wherever. But we need to know about it so we can spread the word. So that's where we started, even before I went to the meeting with Andy James and everybody else. So, and it continues to be something that is a great concern of mine, that there aren't enough people that understand it, and that there aren't enough people demanding that our industrial agriculture practices be changed, and you know, on and on in that particular vein. It's a tremendously scary and important thing, and I agree with Susan that it's important to let people know how very serious this is. And so the challenge for the whole Vashon project is not to be doom and gloom, but to also inject hope and inspiration with every message that we give. So,
yeah, I think what we can do is continually educate people about the facts that there are many different solutions that need to be applied to the climate crisis, soil conservation, CO2, methane, plastics, all those things that are contributing to the climate crisis have solutions, but there are many of them. And the more we know about them, the more likely they are to be applied.
Sure. Craig and then Truman.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with everything I've heard more. The issue that you're addressing right there, Susan, is I hesitate to put it in these terms, but it's a marketing problem.
Yep.
It's how do you get it to stick? And when you've got a government, and we get back to that issue of politics, you have a government that's setting a very bad example. And you have, or did set a very bad example. You have people who are basically in denial, or they think it's happening. It's like the fact that the economy generally is getting better, but is it getting better at my house? Is the world getting warmer, and is the climate changing? Well, is it changing at my house? So you've got this denial, you know, and then you've got people lots of people who don't even, well, they don't know that, you know, Europe isn't a continent. if you're dealing with that kind of basic denominator in terms of education, you're really going to have a bit of a problem. But as was said, the statistics of people who do now recognize that there is an issue with global warming and climate change, you have this cynicism about, well, anything I do personally isn't going to make a difference. You know, okay, it's happening, but I'm not, nothing. I mean, the fact that the what is it called, the Thwaites, the Doomsday Glacier, is now melting. They say that in the day's news at twice the rate that it was, you know, a few years ago, and if it continues at this rate in a couple decades, the oceans will rise by 2 feet. Kind of significant to people who live on an island. Upwards of that number. So the educational and the marketing aspect of this is just really so significant, and as you're well aware.
That's a perfect segue to what I was going to speak about. As you all know, I keep a foot in with the super right wing element of our country. I have relatives and friends that kind of that ilk, and I was raised under that particular mindset. But one of the things that really strikes me is the whole doom and gloom item. When you present this doom and gloom to that genre or that group of people, the response is, oh, that's, you know, the climate's changing anyway. I mean, we don't have anything to do with that. And why should I be worried about that? Because, you know, we've had warmings and coolings throughout history. Well, that's true. And my response to them is always, you know, well, people say, you know, what difference does it make if I pee in the ocean, right? And I said, well, yeah, but if everybody does, it makes a big difference. So if you don't, you know, that's going to start the process. And a perfect example of this, we had one gentleman that was, you know, poo-pooing the whole climate change thing. He said, look, take an ice cube and put it in a glass of water. And once it melts, does that change the level of the water in there? And my response to him was, no, but now put that ice cube on the counter and let it run into the glass. Now what do you have? And that's what's happening. This large glacier that Craig was just talking about is landed. It's not floating on the ocean. And one of the things that's going to happen is one of the things they're concerned about is that it's going to break loose from the land and float out onto the water. Well, guess what? That does it immediately. That changes the level immediately. That's not a thing that's going to happen over time. So anyway, I guess what I'm advocating is more, less doom and gloom and more, what positive things can we do? If you take care of the soil and put grasses, you know, let the grasses come in, change the way you graze your cattle, which makes a huge difference, you're going to have an impact. And not only is it going to impact the environment, it's going to impact your daily life and your income because you're improving your situation. And I really think that's the most important thing that we can do. Change our marketing and our advocacy to a positive spin rather than the doom and gloom negative spin. That's my two cents.
Mm-hmm. Kevin.
You're still muted, Kevin.
Thank you for that summary, Truman and Craig. That's awesome. There are a couple of things that I'm keeping an eye on, and I think it may be very telling of how things move. The war in Ukraine right now is causing Europe to rethink how it acquires its energy. And in the short term, it's going to be a lot of decisions about how do they conserve, because that's something you can do very quickly, as opposed to changing your energy supply. But in the decisions that are being made about their energy supply, I think we may see a future trend being established. The good news is that wind and solar are so much more affordable now than coal and nuclear and gas. The thing about gas is it was claimed to be a bridge fuel. Some people call it natural gas. It's mainly methane. Methane has a much higher global warming potential than carbon dioxide. And the proliferation of fracking and the proliferation of methane, in my opinion, is not at all surprising that we're now seeing these very rapid changes in melting. Methane heats up the planet and heats it up very fast. So the good news there is that people are aware of that and they're moving legislation and money to cap methane leaks in the planet. So I think that the awareness is growing. I think there's some trends that are very interesting to watch as the Ukraine war plays out and Europe's energy choices, but also locally on the carbon front, moving us to our utilities and their good choices. Is another option that we have. So I think there's lots of opportunities to do good work.
Sure. I got to throw this out. Being from Texas and having a lot of relatives and friends still in Texas, of course, the whole gas and oil industry is what keeps that alive. But one of the things that you're talking about there, this capping of the methane, they're discovering, you know, they used to, when they would drill an oil well, and they would have a high concentration of gas, they would flare it or just let it blow. Well, because of these changes, they're discovering, hey, you know, if we cap that and start collecting it, we can sell that. And, oh, it makes us more money and it improves the planet. So, you know, that's one of the benefits of what you're talking about, Kevin.
Sure.
So, we have.
Susan, let me jump back to Susan for a minute. We heard from Rondi about how she got to the point of getting engaged with the whole Vashon project. Susan, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background. What got you to the point where you've become this passionate advocate of
fighting global climate change.
I'm not sure my background has much of anything to do with that, other than I've been a journalist and I've been paying attention for a long time. And when Rondi very passionately gave me her sales pitch on the whole Vashon catalog and the whole Vashon project one night in her car, where she trapped me for an hour, I thought, okay, I can actually do something about this by becoming involved with the whole Vashon project. And so that's my story about how I got involved. And I wanted to address, Truman, your comment from your friends in the right, if you will, about we've had warmings back and forth over time. And I would say at those times, there were not so many people on the planet. And the human infestation wasn't as profound as it has been since the Industrial Revolution. So we have had an impact that does make a difference. Right. And that means we can also have an impact in a positive direction.
Right.
Wow. So that's my soapbox for this morning.
Hey, I just have one quick question. Rondi, could you tell us the name of the gentleman, the TED Talk?
Alan Savory. He's born in Zimbabwe, white, and he now lives in Florida, actually. He had to leave there. Well, I won't go into his history, but anyway, it was really that talk that inspired the regenerative agriculture movement mm-hmm. in a big way, and particularly management of cattle, which you referred to.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's fascinating. My whole family are ranchers. We're agriculture, my whole background. And reading that that business, there's a big ranch in Montana right now that's changed the way it moves its cattle around its property. And they are bringing back grasses that have been gone for a long time. And by just moving the cattle around the ranch, it's improving the ground. I mean, it's improving the ranch. It requires a little bit more work, but it's a fascinating thing to me.
Well, I would just like to add that the Audubon Society now has a certified beef in 18 states that has the slogan on it, no cows, no grass, no birds. Because ecosystems just completely revive under that method.
Mm-hmm. So I love the concept of a small island, big idea that you have developed with the whole Vashon project. Tell us a little bit about how big the project is. I mean, you've alluded to, you know, 30 environmental organizations, over 50, you know, nonprofits. Tell us a little bit about the outreach and the impact in the community that the project's having.
Well, we don't really know, but we printed 5,000 catalogs and they're almost all gone except for maybe 50. So they are out there. 75 businesses participated in the catalog. And like I said, 50 plus organizations. We have a Facebook group, Whole Vashon Project. Anyone can find us there. There's nearly 600 people that are on that. And we have 500 on our mailing list. So, and then, you know, we have bi-weekly environmentally focused articles in the paper. So we hope it's enormous.
We also have productions on our YouTube channel, and you can see the production about three important things about plankton at the movie theater every time you go with our friend Tag Bornell. So we are developing material for our YouTube channel. And as Kevin is about to say, I think, something about legislation. Kevin?
Well, I thought you might want to mention, I think the catalog is online if people want to look for it. Is that true?
That's right.
How do they find it?
WholeVashonProject.org.
The website has all the articles that we call green briefs that appear in the newspaper. It has the catalog. It has images of the full page educational advertisements, if you will, that we have put into the Beachcomber. And we plan to do more. We're looking at quarterly programs with experts educating folks about different optional solutions and what we can do for the climate crisis. And we need money for that, of course. We have expenses. We have monthly expenses. Not a lot. It's an all-volunteer organization, and we're running out of time.
Quickly, say again the website, Rondi.
WholeVashonProject.org.
Oh, thank you. I missed that part. Okay, thanks.
Donate there.
Susan, we actually have another 15 minutes, so we're good.
Oh,
so
we do?
Don't worry. Yes.
Yeah, we've expanded to an hour.
The Brown Briefly has expanded to a full hour. So.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. So tell me how do people get engaged? I mean, certainly go to the website, but if somebody wants to become a volunteer or somebody wants to, or has an idea they want to bring to you, how do they do that?
Rondi?
On our original, we now have a new, we had a beautiful website that Christine Doms created for us, which was kind of like the pitch for Whole Vashon Project, but it wasn't, it wasn't functioning to show what we were up to. So on that website, however, the original one, we had something called Join a Team, which we are kind of refiguring out how to do that on the new website. But we are, you know, because of the pandemic, that slowed everything down for us. But we have had people that will just send us an email and say, you know, I'd like to do something. How can I help? Mm-hmm. And we need to figure out better ways. And if we're going to segue to talking about these 30 environmental organizations, I'd like to preface that by saying that we did a survey at Strawberry Festival, which consisted of this big, scary cartoon called The Four Horses of the Climate Crisis. And they represent greenhouse gas emissions, toxic chemicals, degradation of ecosystems and living beings, extinctions, and waste. And so we asked people in that survey which one of these horses they were most drawn to heal. And we collected 160 responses, and which then had a reason underneath them. And then our ultimate message was, so that's where your passion is. Well, guess what? There are 30 plus environmental organizations on the island, and they're all focused on that, one of those particular issues or horses. So join our latest endeavor, which is Vashon Environmental News, and it's we are now promoting their work on a bi-monthly basis to recruit for them, to share what they're up to. And as Craig said, it's a marketing thing. You know, I mean, that's really what we're about. We're not about taking on something enormous that's going to solve everything. We're disseminating, and we're uniting, and we're marketing, and that's really the plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
Well, so in my mind, here we are, a small island, and you're preaching to the choir, because this island is very much environmentally conscious. We're very much pretty much liberal in our thinking. So my question is, how do you promote this outside of our little sphere here? How do you get it out to that other side? Like east of the mountains, for example.
Well, I can tell you there are five different communities who have Whole Vashon catalogs and are excited about them. And one is in New Hampshire, two are in Vermont, one is in Hawaii as a result of an Airbnb here, mm-hmm. and one is in Nebraska. And so that was also an original dream of the catalog, that we could share an approach that might also be used in some appropriate form with another community. So
ripples on the pond.
There you go.
Yeah, Kevin.
I will say, Rondi and Susan, as you outreach to those different communities, and of course we've talked, so I've been now introduced also to those 30 plus environmental groups. And for those who are listening, we'd love to have them come on Small Talk and talk about the work they're doing. Because I do think there's two things. We do have to spread the word. We also able to connect people to areas where their passion is and where they can also make these contributions that you're talking about. And then I think from there, doing our best to be exemplary for others to follow the lead.
Thank you. And you know, Truman, when you talk about reaching across the mountains and off the island, that's a bigger challenge. And I see it as part of our democracy. If people get out there and vote beyond the 35% voter turnout that we now have, and vote for representatives and senators who will champion the climate crisis, it really can make a difference. We have to exercise that right and that responsibility, and we can encourage people to do that.
Just a quick response. You know, Rondi, what you said really, really struck a chord with me. I think the real way to do this is to plant that seed in those various communities with like-minded people, and allow them to take the concept that you've developed and develop it for their own area and for their own. And by doing that, it'll begin to spread and, you know, obviously propagate. And I think that's a brilliant idea. I would encourage you to continue trying to do that thing.
Kevin.
Yeah, I'd say there's three networks that I'm aware of. Susan alluded to legislative change and electing officials. There's an effort by Indivisible groups across the state to have an environment climate focus on the legislative bills that come forward in our legislative session to support those that are supportive of the climate. So there are ways for people to get involved in that work. There's also the 350 organizations in Washington. There's 13 different groups. They're now networked at the state level. And Indivisible, who has a large interest in climate and the environment. There's probably 70 active groups, again, across the state. So those networks do exist. So to the extent that concepts like the whole Vashon Project can be conveyed through those networks, I'm happy to help to the extent that I can with that as well. Mm-hmm.
All right, I got one more thing I got to throw out here. One of the things that that you hear from the other side is the fact that, well, look, this climate change is happening anyway, right? And so what I want to say to them is, okay, so the climate change is happening anyway. Does it make sense not to plan for that? Because they're saying we don't need to do anything because, you know, we can't affect it. And so I say to them, well, how about planning? The military is going to be planning their marine bases, planning on the ocean rise. If there are military bases in places where there's going to be turned to desert, they need to plan for that. They need to figure out what they're going to do. So maybe the idea to get them thinking about that is to have them plan on, well, we can't do anything about it, but plan on it happening. And by doing that, maybe you can begin to move them toward, well, maybe we can do something about it. Rondi.
I just wanted to say briefly that the essential question for Vashon is how big do we want to go? In terms of following up, would you say planning? I mean, we don't have a government that we can where we can vote. So how could we show other communities how determined we are to demonstrate what it should be like to live in the new reality? Mm-hmm. That's a big one.
Yeah, there's an important trope in American cultural history, the concept of the city on the hill, you know, a shining light, you know, sort of a symbol, you know, that draws people
And I think it's appropriate. I mean, the whole Vashon Project is a city on a hill. Mm-hmm. And just by example and leading by example is an important way, I think, for Vashon, even as a small, isolated community in a far-off corner of the United States, to establish itself and to recognize that we have something that others can benefit from. So that's an important concept. And I think what you guys are doing, Rondi and Susan, the whole Vashon Project, it is a guiding light, if you will.
Great. Thank you so much.
So we're running out of time here a little bit, and this has just been a fascinating sort of discussion. But I'd like to shift gears, and Susan, Rondi, please stay on and contribute. But I'd just like to ask Craig, as a sort of legal expert, what is this special master kind of thing that's going on with the Trump papers, and should we be concerned about that?
Well, yeah. I mean, the special master is not an unusual procedure. I've been a special master appointed by federal judges in the past to deal with certain issues. But in this particular context, what it means is delay, which is really what the Trump team was after. And now the Department of Justice is placed in the strategic questionable position of, do we appeal this preliminary or this injunction, or do we stick with the master situation? I have a feeling they're going to stick with going with the master, which will take the master or masters, a month or two in order to go through these documents. The point being, you can't use any of the documents in their investigation, Department of Justice, during that period. That doesn't prevent national security organizations from going over the documents and determining what the effect is. It doesn't stop investigations in general, but it does present a problem with the use of it. The other thing is, just off the top of my head, I know we're almost out of time. The court's opinion is questionable in terms of its reasoning. It's got some real issues, and the judge seems to have bent over backwards to accommodate the ex-president in a number of different legal positions that we don't have time to go into today.
But doesn't this master have to have all the security clearances? I mean,
Yes.
So is the idea that they're going to get those security clearances, or are they going to try and find someone that already has them?
Oh, I don't know. That's not a prerequisite as to how it's done. It's just that the individuals who are reviewing these documents have to have the clearances either before or given right now.
Okay.
So.
Oh, thanks, Craig. Yeah, and let's go back to Rondi and Susan a little bit. I mean, talking about the special master and all this investigation, I mean, it a bit feels like we're just rearranging the chairs on the Titanic as we head toward this iceberg of global climate change and rapid sea level rise. Is that the way you see it, or how do you react to that?
What I see is all the disunity in this country and globally works against anything we can do for climate change. The previous administration did a lot of damage to America's relationships globally, which, had it remained solid or stronger, might have been a catalyst toward uniting the world against climate change.
I think all these things become distractions from what our common enemy, a la World War II, actually is, and that is the climate crisis.
Right.
You probably have a sunnier view.
Let me just interject. We're just about out of time. I really want to thank Rondi, Susan, thank you for coming aboard. Kevin, you got a last minute before we sign off?
I'll just say, the notion of reaching out to those elected officials who will be supportive of climate next week on Small Talk. We have Debbie Jackson and Vashon to Voters. It's about writing postcards to elect those candidates at the state and national level who will take action. So that's something people can tune in next week to hear about, actions you can take.
All right. Yes, thanks a lot, folks. See you all next week.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
See you next week.